Welcome back. I'm Mark Fisher from The Washington Post, sitting in for Kodjo Namdi. This week, the D.C. Council voted unanimously to spend taxpayer dollars to pay for political campaigns. While the plan faces another council vote and a disapproving Mayor Bowser, before it becomes law, it is the latest among a growing number of local jurisdictions that are using public financing to try to clean up the dirty business of political campaign financing. Montgomery County implemented its public financing system at the start of this year, and Howard counties will kick in 2022. Meanwhile, in Virginia, delegates have proposed a statewide public funding system. What does public financing offer local voters? Does it actually increase the number of candidates who run for office? Does it diversify the list of donors to campaigns? And here to discuss D.C.'s plans, Erica Taylor is the Fair Elections Outreach Coordinator at One D.C., a housing advocacy nonprofit in the district, and Mark Lee is a columnist at the Washington Blade. And Erica Taylor, maybe you could get us started with just a kind of a brief overview of what is it that the council has just approved? What would it actually do? And what do we mean by public financing in this concept?
Sure. Well, the Fair Elections Act of 2017 is designed to strengthen the local democracy by allowing candidates who commit to only receiving small donations to get a 5-to-1 match of their contributions. So that means that if someone gives a $25 contribution to a candidate, that would be matched five times to make it $125 for an effective $150 donation. I mean, this is really sort of critical to do in D.C., where over 60% of contributions have come from outside the city and from corporations and PACs. We're really excited about the positive reception.
And so the way this would work, once people, candidates qualify, would they get a lump sum from the city, or they would just be a matching program?
It's twofold. So once the candidates qualify, they'd get a 2-to-1 match. And once they qualify for the program, they get a 2-to-1 match until they qualify for the ballot, which then becomes a 5-to-1 match.
Okay. So this would significantly change the kind of people who might run for office?
Oh, absolutely. Right now, the folks who donate and contribute to campaigns in D.C. are overwhelmingly whiter, wealthier, older, and more male than the population. So we're hoping to upend that so that more women and people of color who dominate the population are actually able to participate.
And why would public financing change that? In other words, in Washington, we have this unusual situation for a large city where campaigns generally don't spend a whole lot of money compared to other offices around the country. In fact, it's extremely rare for candidates in the district to do any television advertising, which is the largest cost in any campaign. So why would financing make this big difference in who runs when they're not spending a ton of money in the first place?
Well, because there's still a pretty huge wealth disparity within the city. And I've talked to candidates, Ed Patillo, who is a wonderful activist in D.C., who passed away a few months ago when running for Ward 7 office. He said it, multiple times, folks would say, hey, my $10, won't matter. It doesn't. I would donate to you. I want you to win. But what difference does $10 make? Well, when that 10 becomes 60, people are more invested and more willing to participate. And we've seen in New York City just huge participation among women and people of color when they pass their legislation.
Mark Lee, a columnist at the Washington Blade, Erica and other supporters of this bill say that public financing will democratize local campaigns by increasing the donor base and the range of people who might run for office. In a column in the Blade, you described this proposal as astoundingly audacious. Why is that?
Thank you, Mark. It's always a little bit unseemly when incumbent career politicians vote to allocate taxpayer money for their campaigns and those of other candidates. What was interesting about the unanimous vote on Tuesday at the council was that senior members of the council spoke through a little bit of cold water, actually, on the whole notion by tamping down some of the aspirational aspects of this, that it will somehow magically change how elections are financed. It's an incredibly extravagant and expensive program. WAMU reporter Martin Ostermule broke the story last Friday that Mayor Muriel Bowser objects to the large amount of funds, and it's going to be expensive. According to the CFO's estimates, we can expect that this program will cost $20 to $25 million every four-year election cycle, plus several millions more to beef up the Board of Elections to be able to administer this. It's actually incredible in that A candidate for a ward council seat, for example, can announce for their campaign after, in various stages, they get a cash outlay of $40,000, plus they only have to raise 150 contributions totaling $5,000, and they get a 5-to-1 match. So by having the support of only 150 people, they suddenly end up with $65,000 from the city and that $5,000 or $70,000 right off the bat. But there's a more fundamental and functional issue at play here. The council has sort of put the cart before the horse. We don't have an election system that allows all voters who pay those taxes to participate in them because we have closed primaries.
What do you mean by closed primaries?
Only party registered members can vote in the party primaries, and the nearly 20% of no party or independent voters in the district are frozen out of that system. They're barred from voting. So they're going to be funding these candidates for whom they can't even vote for in the, quite frankly, the Democratic primary where the decisions are basically made. And that's a fundamental unfairness. The council should have addressed the way that we vote. You know, the advocates for this policy talk about expanding participation, both in terms of the citizenry as well as candidates. But we are also at the same time freezing out the voters from participating in the system that they now have to fund. It's also going to create a proliferation of candidates, and that's going to mean when we don't have a open system or a nonpartisan primary or a runoff system, that candidates are going to win election with increasingly small percentages of votes, and we're going to have a lot of minority winners as a result.
Erica Taylor, is that a concern for you that if you have a lot more people running for office, somebody could win the office of mayor, for example, with 12-13% of the vote?
Now, we've been very attentive to making sure that this is that people aren't able to game the system and that this isn't become prohibitively expensive for the city. So you actually have to be a viable candidate to get the money that we're making. And to your point, Mark, about the council being self-serving, this is wildly popular within the community. All eight wards have extreme community support, 5,000 petition signers across the city in all eight wards, over 70 organizations have signed on, unanimous support, of course, as you said, in the city council and the judiciary. More than 74 folks testified at the hearing, and either one, two, or three were opposed. So it's not just about the council being self-serving. This is what folks want our democracy to be stronger, and it's not right now.
Let's hear from Congressman John Sarbanes calling in from Maryland. Congressman, welcome.
Yeah, I just wanted to call in and congratulate the council on passage of this reform. I've been focusing on this in Washington in terms of creating these small donor matching systems. We're slogging away on Capitol Hill, but in the meantime, around the country, we're seeing this really grassroots movement for citizen-owned elections. It's incredibly empowering for everyday Americans. It also, as has been indicated by Erica, and many others, is empowering candidates to step forward who could never really afford to run a viable campaign previously. And that's going to be good for the democracy and the composition of places where laws are made. So whether you're looking at New York City or Montgomery County, Maryland, or soon to be Howard County, Maryland, or Seattle or Connecticut or Arizona, these systems are working. They're making people feel like they own their own government and politics again, and I just want to salute the council for good work on this.
Congressman John Sarbanes is the congressman from Maryland's 3rd District, Democrat. And Congressman, is it sufficient to have public financing? Does that accomplish these goals on its own? Or as some of the critics are saying, do you need this to do this in concert with having runoffs or other forms of open primaries, for example, that expands the democracy in those ways?
There's a lot of different things you can do to strengthen the democracy and make people's voices be heard and create more viability across the system. And clearly, I think public financing of this kind is necessary to that overall structure. So I, again, think that this is a terrific move on the part of the council. And we're beginning to get data back from all over the country that shows that when you put these systems in place, people really feel empowered and proud of their democracy again. So that's what we hope to to spread as far and as wide as we can to restore faith in the democracy.
Great. Thanks very much. That's Congressman John Sarbanes from Maryland, and it's a good opportunity to introduce our next guest, Andrew Metcalf, who's the editor of Bethesda Beat for Bethesda Magazine, who can tell us a little bit about how this system that the district is contemplating is actually working. It's a little bit different in Maryland. Tell us what Montgomery County has done about public financing and how it is working.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So this is the first election year, 2018, where Montgomery County will use its new public campaign finance system. And so far, I pulled up the Board of Elections website today and counted the number of candidates who has filed to use public financing. We have 36 candidates in Montgomery County either running for county council or county executive that plan on using this public financing system. And the way it works is that a candidate can only accept between $5 and $150 individual contributions from Montgomery County residents. And depending on whether you're running for county executive or county council, that results in you receiving a matching contribution. In the case of the county executive, you get $6 for each of the first $50 that is contributed to you. So that means each dollar in that $50 gets matched 6 to 1, which is a boon for candidates. And a county executive candidate can earn up to $750,000 in public funds per election cycle, while an at-large council candidate can receive $250,000. And it definitely is opening up the election process. You see all these candidates that are running, but
are those candidates different in kind from those who had run before? In other words, are we seeing people of less means, people from different walks of life, different backgrounds, or is it just more of the same?
I think definitely you see a more diverse group of candidates in this election cycle, although Montgomery County has always had a diverse amount of candidates running, but you see a lot more this year. And it can't all be attributed to public financing because there's also term limits in Montgomery County. So in this election cycle, the county executive Ike Leggett must step down, as well as 3 of 4 at-large council members and 1 district council member. So that leaves 4 open seats on the council, an open seat for county executives. So you're seeing this influx of candidates coming, both using the public financing system as well as term limits, as well as the open seats being open due to term limits.
Let's hear from Greg in the district, who also has some questions about whether this is such a good idea. Greg, you're on the air.
Hi. You know, there's a lot of research out there already, and there's the colleagues that have already rescinded this. But
you're kind of breaking up.
The group that's controlling this, in Washington, D.C., is called AMOS. And a lot of their research is flawed.
Okay. We're sorry. Maybe you could try back calling again, but the sound quality is really not working. Greg's point was that there are other things that should be done, such as Mark Lee from The Blade had suggested, whether it's a cooling-off period for lobbying or a ban on council members having outside jobs, installing term limits as they have in Montgomery County. Mark Lee, would you support public financing if D.C., for example, got rid of that closed primary system?
I think it would certainly make it more palatable to the voters, to the taxpayers and the voters. And I think the council may be underestimating, having heard mostly from advocacy groups during this process, I think they may be underestimating sort of the general public reaction that I sort of am seeing in terms of this. I think it's important to remember that there are only 28 jurisdictions in the entire country, a handful of states, and a smattering of small towns, cities, and counties that have public financing systems like this. One of the data points that we're seeing in the early analysis of that is that it favors incumbents. Incumbents always have the opportunity to reach out to their established networks and multiply their funds. I cover the small business beat in Washington as a focus of my column in the Washington Blade. And, quite honestly, there's going to be a little bit of relief from those business owners who are going to be, for people participating in the program, can only give $200, so they won't have to be expected to give $350 or $500 like they oftentimes are. And yet that candidate can multiply that by five and turn that $200 into $1,000. So in a sense, they actually have to talk to no more than they are currently talking to and fewer people than they have to reach out to now. So there, you know, one thing that strikes me also as funny is that the Board of Elections, which has been heavily criticized for its ability to enforce the existing regulations that we have, is now going to be tasked with monitoring this massive system where there have been celebrated cases of fraud and abuse in the jurisdictions that do have public financing. We're likely to see that here.
And, okay. Erica Taylor, Mayor Bowser opposes this public financing despite the unanimous vote of the D.C. Council. To what extent does she have the authority to prevent it from being implemented? The council controls the purse, but can she simply refuse to spend that money?
What the mayor can do is refuse to put it in her budget, but that's not an uncommon process. I mean, the mayor and council often have different priorities. So when she submits her budget in April, if it doesn't include funding for public financing, our council members have already expressed their commitment to making sure that it's funded. So then they'll add the money to the budget, because exactly as you say, they control the purse strings, and there'll be the back and forth. But we fully expect our council members to follow their word and make sure it's funded.
Let's hear from Brandy in Wheaton, Maryland. Brandy, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on the program. I wanted to call in because I am running for Montgomery County Council at Large using Montgomery County's public financing system, and I am hugely excited to see the D.C. Council also pass this legislation, and just want to give kudos to the huge group of D.C. groups who worked to get this passed, because it's already having a tremendous impact on Montgomery County politics. Andrew Metcalf mentioned that there are a huge number of people running. There are 30 folks running for the 4 at-large seats here in Montgomery County, and that includes a much larger number of women and people of color than we've ever seen before, and the vast majority of those folks are using public financing.
And would you have run for office if public financing was not available?
No, I was just going to say the at-large race typically costs $200,000. I am not a wealthy person, and that race would be much harder for me, especially in a county that's never elected a black woman at large or a black woman to its state assembly delegation without public financing helping me to overcome the barriers that women and people of color still face running for office. And residents are really excited about this. They get excited when they believe that their money makes a difference shaping elections, and when they believe it's going to change the priorities of their elected officials around housing, around transportation, around the economy. And, you know, I agree. Mark Lee mentioned that we need open primary form. That's true in Maryland as well. It takes time and effort for all of us. This is the first time Montgomery County is doing this, and we have to work out some of the kinks of the system. But the difference that we're seeing this make in terms of access to running for office and resident engagement in politics is huge.
Okay. Andrew Metcalf, how typical is Brandy of the people who are entering Montgomery County politics now?
I think Brandy is a fine example of people running for county council this year that haven't ran in the past. There's school teachers running. There's stay-at-home parents running, PTA presidents. We're seeing such a diverse field of candidates. And to be honest, as a local reporter, it's hard to keep track of all of them. There's so many people running.
We have an email from Jim saying, as a candidate seeking public financing in Montgomery County, I disagree with Mayor Bowser. There's no better way to spend taxpayer money than to invest in democracy. If we want to liberate ourselves from the undemocratic influence of big and often outside money, this is an important first step. Erica Taylor, as someone who's fought for this, what would that next step be for you? What will you be advocating once public financing is in? Is it open primaries? What's the next reform you're looking toward?
City Council now has some other reforms ahead of them, including some pay for play reforms, and I think that could be helpful. But I think we're just committed to making sure that we get this up and running and funded, and make sure that it's working properly. So, but yeah, we don't think it's a panacea. We know that there are other reforms that are necessary, but this will go a long way. And in New York City, Mark, it has been incredible for diversifying the number of women and people of color who participated from Bed-Stuy and Bronx, where they never did before.
Finally, just very quickly, an email from Preston says, what if I don't want a certain candidate getting my tax dollars? We already pay tax without representation in D.C. And also, what about candidates who don't actually need the money? Will they get matching dollars?
they can opt in or out of the system. And if they opt out, if they opt in, they can get matching dollars worth, but they can't contribute to their own money. But, you know, and again, you know, this is up to them. But our tax dollars go to all kinds of things that, you know, I don't want my money paying for most of the administration in Congress right now.
We probably all agree on that. Erica Taylor is the Fair Elections Outreach Coordinator at 1DC. Mark Lee is a columnist at the Washington Blade. And Andrew Metcalf is the editor of Bethesda Beat for Bethesda Magazine. Thanks to all of you, and thanks to you for tuning into the show today. I'm Mark Fisher, sitting in for Kojo Namdi.
The Kojo Namdi Show is produced by Inga-Lisa Schroepstorf, Ruth Tam, Mark Gunnery, and Avery Kleinman. The engineer is Meg Bunting. Podcasts of all shows and audio archives are available at our website, kojoshow.org.
Thanks for listening to The Kojo Namdi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.